Meet Sven. He's very excited right now. Sven doesn't play poker, but he's still very excited. You see, Sven is a dealer for Porsche, and he's just found out that PokerStars players earn $7.5 million in VIP points every month. And with our all-inclusive program, that's enough to redeem 5 of the lovely pieces of German engineering every day. Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to leave other schemes, well, out of commission. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast presented by PokerStars. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's February 19th, 2010, and you're listening to the best PokerCast on the internet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I am Scott Long.
Let me ask you, Scott, have you ever had someone's butt call you before?
I've been called a butt a number of times and various variations, but no, I do not believe I have actually been called by a butt.
Now, I know what you're thinking. You're thinking some sort of flatulence joke here, but that's not what I mean. And yes, what does a butt say when it calls you? It probably is looking for a breath mint or, but no, you know, please start using the Charmin or, you know, whatever. But that's not what the butt had to say. This week, I was called by Tony Cousineau's butt. And I thought that was very funny. You know, I'm sitting there doing work. We're on deadline this week, and my phone rings, and it says Tony Cousineau. And I'm like, oh, I wonder what he's doing. You know, maybe he's back in town or whatever. And I answer it, and I hear him saying, hey, boy, here, boy, come here, boy. And I'm like, what is – I'm like, Tony, and he can't hear me. So I hung up, and I texted him, and I'm like, dude, I think he called me, but you didn't mean to. And he sends me back a text that says, yep, you were just butt called. So as if that wasn't enough, at 11:45 last night, another butt called me.
Oh!
Except this butt has a name of Scott Long.
Oh!
And it was actually you on the line. So, because I can only call somebody a butt if they call me at midnight when my wife gets up at like 4:30 in the morning to go to work the next day. I'm like, why is he calling me? Luckily, I had my phone on quiet and didn't wake up the missus. But you had a very good reason for calling me, and I can't wait to share it with the Ante Up Nation.
Yeah, well, you know, we had a riddle on the show a couple weeks ago, right? And
yeah.
We're still getting calls. People, please.
Don't
stop.
They owe us swag now? Those people owe us money or something.
The swag was claimed before we even finished the show. No reason to call us anymore. It's fish. We know it. But, you know, so here's a new riddle, Chris. If you win a team tournament and your teammates are nowhere to be found, do you really win?
Well,
Don't even guess, because I'm going to give you the answer.
Oh, it was rhetorical?
It was rhetorical. The answer is no. And, you know, we had the team tournament at Tampa Bay Downs. It was last night, which was, Tuesday, whenever people listen to this show. And I finished second. I took the Ante Up team all the way to the pinnacle of victory.
Nice.
And we're playing heads up for the championship. You know, $10,000 on the table, or at least that's what I was pretending it was. And a couple of the other people standing around are like, hey, Scott, where's your team? And I looked around, and there wasn't even an Ante Up cricket in the house. Not even a cricket.
Were there Ante Up magazines somewhere that you could have, like, propped up the photo of me and some other people that resembled your teammates and
that
made you feel good?
That was the closest thing I could get to a teammate. You know, and I'm just having a little fun here, but we invited a super fan Barb, we call her, from Ocala.
Yeah.
You know, we run into her a couple times, and we told her about the team tournament. She said, hey, anytime you want me to be on your team, you give me a call. So I gave her a call this week. She's like, I'll be there. They did a 2-hour drive down. She picked up her son over in Tampa, and he was a teammate. And then, of course, our regular teammate on this thing, John Lane, your online columnist. And they all had various degrees of success, but not as good as me. And, you know, at least Barb came over and said, hey, you know, I've got a two-hour drive. I hope you don't mind me sitting around here waiting for you to lose. And I'm like, oh, no, Barb, that's fine. Take off.
If you don't mind, I'd like to backtrack a little bit. And I would like to know what varying degree of success John Lanier had by being the first one knocked out of the tournament. Was it that he was successfully gave the tournament director the buy-in? Was that his success?
No, he was successfully... he was successful in getting out of there in time to get home to play online and take down a much bigger tournament than I did.
Yeah, I know.
That's success. How's that?
Okay, but it wasn't anything to do with your team tournament.
But yeah, I was real excited that this thing worked out well. I mean, I caught some breaks like I always do. And, you know, it's such a fun format. I got to get you back out there, Chris. You're really going to enjoy this.
I will be back out there. It just usually comes up on our deadline week, and I'm just so busy with finishing up the magazine that I can't get away. But I will be back out there.
Blow out the magazine. That's what I do.
I know. Believe me. I tell my wife every night, you know, Scott's blowing off the magazine again. I got to carry his ass.
Here's the format. You know, four player teams, and they separate you all into a different shootout table, right? So,
right.
You have to be in the final top two of your shootout table, and you move on, and then it becomes a heads up bracket after that. So it's pretty exciting, and they changed it after their first tournament. So now it's best two out of three in the heads up matches, and I gotta say, I wholeheartedly agree with that decision. As in, both of my first two matches, I lost the first game. It would have been on the rail. But, hey, get this, Chris. It's best two out of three, and I lost my first matches twice.
Man.
You know what that means?
You're awesome.
I had to rally and win two in a row to move on. Not once, but twice. And then I get to the final, and my opponent stares me down. I go to shake his hand, as I always do with my opponents. Good luck. Oh, no! He backs up, almost falling over. Oh, no, we're not shaking hands until this thing's over.
Hell no. You got to be kidding.
And I'm like, whoa, okay, game on. So, you know, I shifted the little blue shark optics down, cover my eyes. I'm like, all right, we're not playing friendly here. And he's like, hey, I won both matches in my previous one, so I'm 4-0, man. You have no chance.
Oh,
no chance.
God. Oh, my. Was I playing against you?
It felt like it. It really did.
Wow,
I'm like,
that's
oh,
cocky.
Okay, well, you know, hey, I'm just humbled being in your presence, sir. I'll try to make this quick so you can go out and then, you know, hit the strip clubs and celebrate your victory. And boom! Booyah! Knocked him down the first game.
Nice!
The Russian is cut! The Russian is cut! And he was stunned, man! Stunned, I tell you. And, of course, then he went to beat me the last two. Boom! The dream had to end somewhere, right?
Yeah, but you had a big payout, right? It was worth it. It didn't matter. You're going to make a lot of money.
Yeah, right. You know, I totaled up after tip, dividing up the kitty between the four players, I profited $39 for roughly 5-6 hours of work.
Wow.
Which is probably 7-8 times as much as I make doing Ante Up.
And that would be $7 or $8 an hour, I think. That's about right. That's good number management there. Nice job.
You know, hey, what a grueling tournament, though. I mean, there was 9 heads-up matches I played. I mean, actual games, heads-up games.
Yeah, yeah.
Not to mention the shootout to get there. And, of course, my patented just kind of limp-into-the-money strategy worked finally. So it wasn't like I was playing a lot of poker in that shootout and got lucky there. But I tell you this, I'm really enjoying the heads-up, and I am looking forward to our Ante Up Apes heads-up tournament, whenever that is. And Tampa Bay Downs is going to be doing a 64-player March Madness heads-up tournament on March 24th, so I'm definitely down for that.
Cool.
And, you know, the one thing that all my opponents said, I got them all frustrated because they said, man, I cannot get chips off you. You will not put chips in the pot. And every one of my matches, I was the last one playing in all three of them. Well, actually, the last one, obviously, but the first two. And people were just going crazy. But, you know, I like that, playing that pod control and frustrating people. Like, man, I had kings. You didn't call. Why are you always folding?
And finishing last has got to put a strain on your bladder because you don't have any, you can't go to the bathroom, right? Because you start the next matches.
Fortunately, they were very nice. Let me have a couple PP breaks there to
PP breaks
to alleviate the pressure there. But it's taxing playing that long, and I felt good that I was frustrating with that because I know I'm on to something. But obviously, I played 9 matches and won 5 of them, so I've got some work to do. But I think I've kind of figured out my leaks, and I'm working on it. So I'm really excited about this heads up thing. I'm going to be working on that more.
Well, congrats, buddy. I'm proud of you. And of course, the next one you said was Tuesday, March 16th at Tampa Bay Downs, and then the all heads up one is the 24th of March. So if you're in the area, you might want to consider it because not many people are dealing heads up tournaments, and it's a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
You know, from making $39 after 6 hours to making like $390,000 on one hand.
You really can't compare the two.
No, they're really not on the same level. But High Stakes Poker debuted at the beginning of the week on Sunday.
So AJ Benza's back.
And AJ Benza is not back.
Oh,
very, very, very frustrating. And you know, I don't know if it's irony because I always try to make it the pure definitions of irony, but a sure. Godfather marathon was playing on AMC at the exact same time that High Stakes was debuting, and I thought, man, how sad is this that, you know, Gabe Kaplan just sits there all by himself and talks like Ali Najad. And, you know, Ali makes jokes once in a while, but obviously Gabe is much funnier than Ali, and Gabe just tells jokes that he thinks are funny, and nobody has nobody to bounce him off of, it seems.
Yeah, and I'm used to that.
I'm not down with it yet. It's kind of a love-hate relationship. I mean, I love the fact that Kara Scott interviews these players very quickly after, like, a hand that was very, you know, pivotal or a big pot or something, and you get to find out, you know, what they were thinking or why they did that or whatever. That's cool to me. I love that immediate feedback. But at the same time, I miss the repartee between Gabe and AJ, and it's tough not hearing another voice there. You know, one thing I did like is Phil Ivey's going to be on every single episode, and I think Durr is too. And Ivy has like $500,000. He started with $500,000, and he had almost like $800,000 when the episode ended. One episode, he felted Phil Hellmuth, and Hellmuth didn't rebuy. Hellmuth got felted and left. That was it.
Wow! Just walked out.
And
Phil has left the building.
They think that was the first time it's ever happened, especially on the first episode of a season where someone didn't rebuy after getting felted. They've never seen that happen on the show, and I couldn't believe it. I mean,
maybe sales are down at Poker Brat Clothing. Save that money for the marketing or something.
But I mean, I enjoyed the show like I usually do. I mean, I like that show a lot more than the other ones for different reasons. You know, I like to be a cash game player, and I like to see what they do. But it's a great cast. It's like the best cast I've ever had. The only person missing from it to make it perfect would be Sammy Farha. So I enjoyed it. And not much more to say about it, really, but I really miss AJ, and I wish he was still on the show.
Should we have a moment of silence?
Yeah, do you have a tear forming in the corner of your E, as they say?
All right, back to the show.
We got some upcoming events, and as we do every week, you and I are so busy. You know, it's amazing. Jean said to me the other night, she says, you know, I'm just going to get used to not seeing you anymore, because you guys are just taking off, and it's true. We always got things to do now.
Yeah, and I tell you, Laura loves that. She's like, oh, my God, you're going to be gone again? Excellent.
That's awesome.
Excellent. all right, well, we're going to run through them pretty quickly here. Apes is coming up. Free roll this Saturday at noon Eastern time. I believe there'll be 10 seats given away to the 14,000 people that are entered already. So good luck any of the sadists that are be doing that. But the actual event will be on February 27th at noon.
No limit.
Look for that. And, you know, Chris, I'm afraid this might be the first Apes I'm going to miss in my life.
Yeah.
I'm going to be snowy up in Montreal. But, you know, we'll see. Maybe if I get the wife drunk the night before, she'll want to sleep in, and I'll be able to play. So that's my plan.
Yeah, my mom and dad's anniversary is that day, so I'm sure I'll be with them on that day. So I won't be there either. So it's the first Apes event that we will not be playing ever. That's never happened before.
Wow, no more pressure on me to get in there now.
Yeah, you know I won't be there. So
because just by playing, I'll beat you.
It's historic. It's historic on so many levels now.
And remember, all that information is anyupmagazine.com/apes, AIPS. And then Poker 101 is keeping going, Chris, and we're stepping it up now.
Yeah, we're gonna start increasing it, the quality of the camp, the quality of the information given out, and on February 25th, next week, we're having the ladies-only event. It's the last one. They're going to start to move forward after that one. It'll be 6 p.m. at Derby Lane in St. Petersburg.
What state is that?
Florida. That's Florida.
Florida. Excellent.
Yeah, yeah. Right, yeah, not Russia, by the way. And then after that, we're going to step it up with some intermediate classes. It's kind of a – I hate that word when you want to describe what we're doing, but March 11th and March 25th. And the March 11th one's pretty exciting because, as we talked about before, we had that Florida Million – tournament that's going to be going on, and this is going to be like a sort of primer of how to succeed in this event, and who's going to help us teach it?
Hopefully somebody, because we're not qualified.
Because we exactly. I'm just hoping to sit back and enjoy the buffet. But it's WSOP bracelet winner and former Antiup guest Don Baruch, who lives in Tampa. He's going to be down there, and he's going to teach the course for us, and we're just going to chime in and agree with him when we have to.
That sounds great. And then the next one, of course, will be March 31st. Not the 25th. We had a little scheduling change there because March 25th, we're going to be on the cruise. The Antiup Poker Cruise.
That's right. That's right. It was going to be the 25th, and they changed it to the 31st just to accommodate us because they didn't really expect us to. You know, it's not like Derby Lane has a chopper that they could fly us out to the Gulf of Mexico and let us land on the Royal Caribbean to do the cruise. So that's right. March 25th to the 29th. Getting close to the last call, right?
Yeah, that's right. I just talked to our travel agent today. Still getting a couple bookings, but not a lot of places to put people on this ship anymore, Chris.
Right.
So if you're interested in cruising, now is the time to call Mary Kolb at 727-733-3428 and tell her you want to come down to Tampa and go on this beautiful cruise and seeing Chris Cassenz in a Speedo.
Oh, man. You know what? I can't think of anything better than to have you read the Antiup News Desk now.
All right, let's get to it. Poker Stars and Canadian Sports Network, TSN, have teamed up to create the TSN Poker Club. RecentPoker.com reports the club offers members three free tournaments a day, featuring prizes such as snowboards. Man, I tried to get snowboards as prizes for apes. Didn't happen.
Ice skates and igloos. Yay! Talking about cold deck.
I want to win one of those snowboards so I can do that racing that's going on in the Olympics, man. That's awesome.
Cool. Those are pretty wild. It's amazing how they even get any momentum once they have to, like, if they get stopped at all for any reason, they're screwed.
That's what I was telling Laura when I was watching. I'm like, man, they just, it's like Pinewood Derby.
All right. Peter Matthews, a Democrat running for Congress in California's 37th district, tells CardPlayer that he supports online poker regulation. He faces Representative Laura Richardson in the June 8 primary.
Yeah, he's probably one of several candidates out there that are going to be beating this online poker drum, and hopefully we'll get some elected and get this thing changed.
Yeah, dude, that happens, and then the ball starts rolling. It'll start snowballing, and soon we'll have a huge sort of snowman at the bottom of the hill that's this big pot of gold of money for us that, you know, all right, never mind. Go ahead, move on.
All right, I love this final item as a true marketer at heart. Jason Mershon, a poker pro and songwriter from California, is promising to share 50% of his World Series of Poker main event final table winnings with the first 15,000 people who download and buy his new song, Playing Poker for a Living. Now that's playing and living, not playing and living. I love this. He's not even at the main event final table already. He's already given the money away.
That's right. If he gets there, though, it's going to be yours.
It'll be a nice payday. Plus, you get the song.
Yeah, we'll put a link on our forum at antiupmagazine.com/forum so you guys could beat him to the punch and get your share of his millions.
And that's the tagline. I'm sure he's already thought about this, but 50% of the World Series of Poker main event for a song.
For a song. That's smart.
No? No, not working for you?
No, that's good. That's very smart. I like that.
Well, we'll see what Jason says.
Interesting hotline clip this week. Comes from Gundam Poker. He wants to react to your little bluff conversation we had recently.
Hey, this is Gundam Poker. I was just calling. This is a great conversation about bluffing that you guys had, whether there's bluffing in poker. And I absolutely agree with Chris. And the other thing is, Annette, not looking at your cards, you still can be bluffing because you can be representing a hand better than a random hand, which still means that it's a bluff if you're raising with a random hand. Statistically, it's still a bluff. And definitely, also the reason that it's a bluff is because if the players saw your cards, if they would call your bet, then that clearly indicates that you're bluffy, because if they couldn't see your cards, therefore they fold, but if they could see your cards, they would call. That's proof positive that you've just made a bluff.
Hey, somebody agrees with me.
Not everybody's perfect. Everybody has their faults, and you know that's what Gundam's downfall is in life. He'll probably be all right. See, people are just missing this thing, though. Again, he's like all fixated on the cards.
I know.
My whole argument wasn't about the cards; it's about the betting.
I know.
And I have to say this too, and I think we have a clip coming up here from Lauren that's also going to kind of kick you in the little butt there, kick you in the butt. It's like calling you in the butt. I talked about this on the Poker Wars Live radio show that you and I often are guests on down in Palm Beach, and I think you can get that link at pokerwars.info. We had a good discussion about this as well, too, and the host there, Antonio Pinzari, agrees with me, but not in the same way. You know, I love when people say that, I think you're wrong, Stein, and he said exactly what I was saying, just in a different way. So it sounded like, you know, he was right.
Yeah.
But I'll let him win. I'll let him win. Because, you know, Antonio and I are both on this higher plane. We're able to see past the cards.
Yeah.
Unlike Gundam.
Yeah, okay. All right, well, we'll see what Lauren has to say.
Chris, a bluff is not always a lie. When you bet with a hand, when you bet and you don't have a good hand, you're not betting that you have the best hand. You're betting that the other guy will fold. And if you're sure the other guy will fold, then you're not bluffing. Then you're bluffing, but you're not lying.
It's not a lie. It's a bluff, but it's not a lie.
Well, if anyone who has watched The Princess Bride, and they'll see in the scene where, Billy Crystal and Carol Kane are the old wizard and wife, and the guy squeezes his stomach, and he says, "True love!" And then he says, "You heard that? You cannot have anything better than true love." And he says, no, you're right. There's nothing better than true love. But I distinctly heard him say, "To blathe." And that means to bluff. And to bluff means to lie. So you're probably playing in a poker game. So that was the scene from Princess Bride where to bluff means to lie. Bluffing is lying, Lauren. I'm sorry, but I apparently you work in Manhattan, so you probably lie for a living and you want to make yourself feel better.
Oh, man.
But to bluff is to lie.
Wow. Wow.
I haven't teased Lauren in a long time. I haven't played in his home game in a while, so I'm hoping that...
Teasing Lauren is one thing, but teasing the entire island of Manhattan? Jeez.
Oh, man. Tell you what, maybe they won't hear this part of the show. Just tell him what he won, and then we'll move on so we can forget
all
about
right,
it.
Lauren ain't getting stuff, anything, because, you know, he's got so much swag from us, he had to get a second apartment. For all the swag we've sent him over the years. But Gundam, we're going to send you a deck of J-Design playing cards from ClassicPlayingCards.com. They are the official playing cards of Ante Up.
Okay, well, now we have a mailbag from Ben, and it looks like DeRocher.
Yeah.
It's one of those French words where you don't pronounce the S's, I think.
Well,
so.
These nutmeggers, you know, none of them have names that make sense. I mean, Cosenza, I mean, come on. If you're from Connecticut, you got a name that no one can pronounce. How's that?
I'll read the letter. He says, what do you think about everyone chipping in money for the Bubble Boy? Which I know you're going to love this. Cause
woo-hoo! That's my name.
It seems to be a good way to lower your variance when the table is relatively short-stacked, but also lowers your earnings if you feel you are one of the better players at the final table. I'll give a quick interjection here and say I think that... paying the bubble boy is fine because really it's spread out over all the players. You're not really lowering that much of your money. I mean, I guess the overall prize pool is affected because you're taking like $10 from everybody or $100 or whatever it is. But, you know, the grand scheme of things, it's not that much of a hit to whatever you're going to win anyway. And who knows, you could be the bubble boy somehow and you'd be grateful. So I'm all for it.
All right, you're wrong.
Ah,
you're absolutely wrong.
All right.
Brutally wrong. And everybody that agrees with you is brutally wrong too. So Gundam, see, this is what happened. Now your Gundam is giving money to Bubble Boys. He doesn't even know it. I wrote a column in the current issue, which
right.
may not necessarily be current by the time this comes out, about chopping. And this isn't quite chopping, but it's got the same concept. And we did have a good discussion on Poker Wars about this too. And you know, here's the thing that Antonio said on that show, and I totally agree. If you give the money to the bubble boy, you're creating comfort. And the last thing you want to do at a poker table is make your opponents feel comfortable. So, you know, everybody gets kind of like, you know, clenched up, getting close to the bubble. How am I going to make that money? And that's when good players take advantage of them. So if you all put your hands up, oh, sure, we'll give $5 to the bubble boy. Now you've just made one more person comfortable. So screw the short-term stuff. Just play to win, man.
See, now, I know in your heart you don't really feel this way, because I could go back, if I had the time, I would dissect all of our shows and probably find 24 instances where you were like, yeah, yeah, let's just pay the bubble boy or do the $10 thing. Or and now all of a sudden you're so adamant against it, I don't believe you. I think you're bluffing the Idiot Nation.
Very nice.
I'm calling
nice.
You bluff.
Well played.
Buddy.
Well played.
And by bluff, I mean lying.
Hey, I'm a growing boy, as you can tell by my waistline, and I change my views over time. There's nothing wrong with that. Keep an open mind out there. So.
Okay. All right, so when you're the short stack at the next tournament we're in and we're at the final table together.
So we're definitely doing a save for me.
Okay. All right, you hypocrite. Let's hear our one-minute mystery. Oh, wait, we can't.
Oh, hey, you're gonna steal swag from fellow nutmegger?
I figured the way you were acting, you were going
to
be so...
You want to be the only one in Connecticut that has swag.
You were You were so ticked off at him, I thought you weren't going to give him anything.
I'm not ticked off at him. He asked an honest question. You're the one that told him the wrong answer.
All right, fine.
All right, Ben, I still love you, buddy, and we're going to send you a deck of Texas Hold'em strategy cards, some great pokerhands.com. Enjoy those and savor them, knowing that Chris almost snatched them from you.
Okay, now it's safe to solve a mystery.
Greetings, this is Columbo from PokerWannabe.blogspot.com, and this is another one-minute mystery. The Case of the Unseen Demon. It's a game of regulars, and we are in the second hour of a five-table, no-limit, multi-table tournament. The blinds are up about 120-240 with a 25 ante. The table has really tightened up, and it folds all the way around to the small blind, who simply calls 120. I check my option into the big blind, and we see a flop.
Does it sound like we are missing something?
The flop comes 8 of clubs, 6 of diamonds, 9 of clubs, and the small blind checks. With no raising pre-flop, when it's checked to me, I bet. I bet the 240, and the small blind check calls.
I can't imagine it could be that easy.
So the turn's the 4 of diamonds, and he checks again. I read that call is pretty weak, and the 4 of diamonds is not a big card here, so I bet the pot and bet out 720. Again, he check calls.
Do we know if we wanted to be here or not?
The river's the 7 of hearts, and suddenly the small blind bets 1,500 all in. I call for some time because, hey, I gotta look at my hand. I look down at the 8 of diamonds and the 7 of spades. Well now, do you think I should call?
Remember Sven, our friendly Poker Stars Porsche dealer? Sven's still very excited.
Yeah!
He already knows that Poker Stars players together earn enough VIP points to redeem 5 Porsches every day. What's made him a little more excited is the fact that 5 of our Poker Stars players have already claimed these lovely pieces of German engineering. Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to have left all the other schemes, well, stuck in neutral. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
After taking 13th place in the 2005 World Series of Poker main event, Bernard Lee has consistently added to his poker accolades at the table. At the same time, he has become one of the best-known poker journalists, writing for the Boston Herald and ESPN, hosting his own radio show and doing TV commentary. And this month, Bernard signed a deal to be the official spokesman for Foxwoods Resort Casino. Bernard, thanks for joining the Ante Up Nation today.
Well, thank you guys for having me on. Appreciate it.
Well, hey, we have a lot to talk about today, Bernard, but first I have to ask you this. You've been doing a lot of interviews this month. How's it feel being on the other side of the questions?
it's fine. You know, ironically, I kind of started my career doing it that way. I did a lot of interviews when I came back from the World Series, and it's kind of reminiscent of that. I've definitely done a lot of interviews over the last few years, but to do this many in a row, it definitely felt like 05 all over again.
Well, you know, Bernard, I first met you at Foxwoods, and you always have done so well there, and including winning undercard events and things like that, and now you've inked this deal. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, well, I mean, first and foremost, I'm just really, really honored and humbled that Foxwoods would consider choosing me. I mean, there's so many players out there. There's obviously players who have been really successful. But it was something that kind of worked out very, very well. Basically, the scenario that we have worked out is a sponsorship deal, a two-year deal, where I will be obviously sporting their logo out on the tour. My radio show, the Bernard Lee Poker Show, will be the presenting sponsor is now Foxwoods. And really just kind of continue building on what they have. In all honesty, Foxwoods is one of the biggest and one of the best rooms in the country. And I really don't think that many people can dispute that. It is part of the World Poker Tour and has had events for really ever since they began. The World Poker Finals has been a tradition out there for a long, long time. A lot of people have made their name from the World Poker Finals. And, you know, one of the quotes that Card Player wrote of me a couple years ago was that I was the quote-unquote voice of New England poker. And I think that's just kind of revolving on a lot of the things that I've done for poker in New England, whether writing for the Boston Herald or having my radio show or, you know, even working with ESPN, which is based out of New England. And Fox was not only being one of the best in the world, but is definitely the premier gaming destination in New England. So, in the words of Foxwoods, it's kind of a nice marriage to put those two together.
Now, it's official spokesman is what they're calling you, but it's essentially right. a lot like, you know, signing with the Poker Stars or Full Tilt, right? You're wearing the logo,
absolutely.
You're really promoting Foxwoods wherever you go, right?
Sure, absolutely. That's exactly true. And I think that's where the question marks from so many people, everyone's asking, so what does that mean? And I think it's because this is so different and so unique. You know, when you sign with Stars or when you sign with Full Tilt or UB or Doyle's Room or whatever the room might be, everyone understands that. Oh, okay, I got it. But this hasn't happened with casinos. You know, there have been some other deals. I know that Scotty had one with Cherokee and Daniel had a small one with Wynn, which wasn't exactly the same. Michael Mizrahi had one with Planet Hollywood. But this is the first time that, you know, what you would consider a major casino, and please, that's no offense to the other ones in Cherokee, et cetera, but, you know, one of the ones with a major stop on the tour. And I think it's a little bit of a different formula than the other ones, in the sense of this is taking someone who is a more of a regional player that obviously has to do a lot with the regional casino. And it might not only be just about their playing, but may also have more of reach outside of playing, such as the media opportunities that I have.
Well, you have a chance to work with the poker room and the poker room management to maybe work on tournaments for, or at least having, you know, their ear for designing these tournaments for them and promotions and things?
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's a lot of stuff that, you know, one of the things that, you know, isn't necessarily exactly part of the contract per se, but is definitely something that they feel that they can utilize is, not many people necessarily know this about my background, but I used to work for a Fortune 500 company for 9 years in marketing and new business development specifically. I have an MBA in marketing. This is what I used to do. So to market products and to market a franchise, I used to be responsible for a franchise upwards of $50 to $75 million. That was what the franchise was. And marketing products like that is what I made my living on. So marketing, you know, for example, myself and my brand, that's a lot easier. And then in addition to that, helping the poker room increase their marketing visibility, et cetera, they can, of course, tap into my, you know, background and you know, if they have any questions regarding that with all my heart, I'll obviously help them out.
Well, but Ern, I know in talking to you before this interview, too, that this is a deal that's been in the works for you guys have been working on this for probably more than a year, I think. At its core, it seems like such a simple concept. So sure. why would it take this long? Is it because of the uniqueness of it or something else?
Well, I think that, you know, we've been talking on and off for a little bit, but the real essence of the deal really kind of came together within the last year. You know, why? Well, you know, it's a deal, right? I mean, any deal that comes into play is definitely going to take some time. I mean, whether it's legal issues or whether it's discussions among management. And then also, like you just said, there's no real precedent to this. It's one thing where you go to an online site and say, well, I want his deal, or I want something similar to what he's doing. And the online site can say, okay, we can do that. You can't do that here. You can't say, we would like X, Y, and Z. And the person would be like, I don't understand. What is that like? You can't point to someone and say, what he was doing, I'll do for you. There is nothing like that. And so you obviously have to show management. You have to show the poker room. You have to show everybody, this is what I feel that I can do for your room and what I can help out and potentially help your room do. And you know, you have to convince people, and so that takes some time. And then also the room, in addition to that, wants to discuss certain things, and they were discussing things with me and things that they wanted us to do. And you'd go back and forth. And when push comes to shove, it was a very, very easy discussion in that respect. It just, you know, obviously for myself, I would love for this to happen earlier. And I think that other people within Fox was wanted this to happen earlier too. But you know, this is a very, very big company. This is a multi-billion, I don't know the exact numbers, but a huge, huge company. And with any huge company, it takes time. And, you know, I think for myself, fortunately, coming from a huge Fortune 500 company, I understood that. And, you know, you obviously have to have some patience in the whole process. And myself and my business manager, we held that patience, and we're very pleased that it came out the way it did.
Now, before this deal, you were a busy guy. I mean, Scott mentioned it in the intro. You do writing, you do hosting, you do your own show, and oh, by the way, you're a poker player. You know,
right.
So really, how difficult is it now adding this to your duties as well to still be able to be a player? And do you have any advice for our busy listeners who want to fit poker in while they can?
Well, I would say to the second part of your question first is that when you are doing this as a part-time thing, which in all honesty, that's what I did. After my 05 run at the World Series, I didn't quit my job.
Right.
You know, my first belief was that, well, could I do this again? You know, I mean, you have to really prove it to yourself that you can do it again. I mean, there are a lot of people who have made deep runs in the World Series, and you've never heard their name ever again. So you don't want to suddenly quit your job and have, you know, ideas of grandeur because you just had one deep run. So really, definitely, you know, take some vacation days and play and figure out what local tournaments you can play. And, you know, I really did that for 2 years. I didn't take one vacation with my family. Every vacation was with doing poker. And, you know, you can put a lot of testament to my wife. My kids were so young that I don't think they knew any better, right? My daughter was an infant. My son was two. So whether we took them on a vacation or not, I mean, I take them to my grandmother's or the park. They think it's a vacation. So that, you know, you can't say that was anything worse for the wear. But you give my wife a lot of credit in all this of her support of saying for 2 years we're not going to do anything. Of course, we've made up for that since. But you know, take your time. See if you can do this again. Play in local events. You know, there's so many World Series circuit events, World Poker Tour events, now the NAPT across the country that you'll have the opportunity to play in smaller buy-in events. And then to answer the first half of the question, you know, this is going to take a little bit more time, obviously, but in all honesty, it's not as much as you would think. It's not that because of this, my workload or my time is going to exponentially increase by threefold. I was playing already a fairly decent schedule on tour. You know, I'm not playing a Michael Binger, Eric Baldwin schedule where literally you go from tournament to tournament to tournament to tournament. That's just not what I do. I pick a tournament. I go there for 4, 5, 6 days. and then I come back home. I'll stay home for a couple weeks and do the same thing, depending on where they are. And usually my schedule is pretty much, in general, I would say Chicago and in. You know, that's really a world circuit event in Iowa is what I'll definitely play, which is a little bit further out. But I don't usually do Las Vegas or California unless it's the World Series or maybe a Bellagio event. Of course, I'm already going off of that because I'm going to play Bay 101. But it's not really going to extend it that much. I might play in an event or two more, and the reason being is that I can now have that opportunity because Fox was just sponsoring me. So there may be an opportunity where I'm looking at potentially going to World Series Europe this year. I'm looking forward to that. I've really wanted to play it for a couple years, and just, A, whether I haven't been able to afford or take that chance. I mean, it's a lot of money to go to London and play. It's almost a $20,000 buy-in, and London isn't the cheapest town in the world. from all indications, what I've heard of people who've had the experience, you know, $400 or $500 gets you basically a closet.
But you're used to it in Boston. Boston's not cheap either, buddy.
Well, yeah, no, understood. But I don't have to rent in Boston, right? I own a house out here, so I can live in my own house. And at least you're building equity on that. But when you're dropping down $400 or $500 to basically stand upright and sleep, I mean, that's not the easiest thing in the world. So, but I mean, like I said, I think my schedule is not really going to change that much. You might add in maybe 4 or 5 extra tournaments during the year, and then beyond that, you know, I'm really going to maintain the same schedule.
You know, when I mentioned Bernard Lee to the people I talk to, they always go, "Oh yeah, the family guy," because they always remember you with your pictures. And you mentioned your family and how supportive they are now. I mean, obviously, as you get busy, are they going to be traveling with you a little bit more? How do you carve out that extra time for them when you're playing?
You know, it's a very, very interesting comment, and I don't take them on tour at all. My wife, in all honesty, doesn't really like going to casinos that much. She doesn't mind staying in the hotel or going to the spa every once in a while, but going into, I mean, I think what we've been married 14 years coming on this year, and I think I've taken her onto a casino floor. It can't be more than a handful. I mean, really. I mean, she's, and the only time she's bet is when someone's forced her to throw a quarter into a slot machine or something like that. So she said that's just not what she likes to do. So this isn't something she'll want to be like, oh, goody, now I get to travel with you. No, it's not going to work that way. My wife does work. She's my wife's a physician, so she works. Fortunately, she works part-time, so she doesn't have to work all the time. She can help take care of the kids with my in-laws, we're very fortunate that help us out. The kids are 6 and 4, so obviously, and they're going to be 7 and 5. So they're in the midst of school, so I can't be kind of taking them around with me and doing that. So the fortunate thing that I always look at it as is that when I used to work full-time, being in marketing, we were the head of our franchise, and we would travel once a month somewhere, whether it was a trade show or whether it was on the road seeing our customers or whether it was a national meeting or something. So I would be away from home about once a month, somewhere in the country. But when I came home, unfortunately, the next day I'd have to go right to work, and I'd have to be at work from 8 to 6 or 8 to 7 or whatever it was. Well, when I land at home, I'm at home. You know, I get to take my son and daughter to school. I get to pick them up from school. I get to, you know, we had 7, 6, 7, 8 inches of snow the last couple of days. Well, I could roll around in the snow with them at 2:30 in the afternoon if I really wanted to. You know, my son has a trip to the museum, and they ask for, you know, chaperones. I'm raising my hand. I want to do that kind of stuff. And that's the thing that I feel so fortunate about, that my children, you know, I've done this. I quit my job in 07, and you know, for my son to be 4, my daughter to be 2, I have literally been with my kids as they're growing up, and I'm home with them when they're growing up. And yeah, I'm about to partake on some trips that I'll be away for a few days, but you know, I just feel so fortunate that when I'm at home, I'm at home, and that's a good thing.
Now, Scott and I had the opportunity to hang out with you a little bit at the Windy City Poker Championship, which is always tied to a charity event. How important are charity events to you?
Well, I think it's very, very important. I think that, you know, the world of poker is definitely something very exciting to just the general public, because there is this opportunity to win a lot of money. You know, when you play in the World Series and first prize is, you know, upwards of $7, $8, $9, $10 million. When you play in the World Poker Tour and first prize is in the $1 million range, it's a lot of money being thrown around, and in all honesty, a lot of money that is just in outside of the range of what people normally can see. And I think that it is our time and our turn to really give back to society. And I think that there are a lot of opportunities doing that. And as my situations and my fortunes turn as well, I've been working with a lot of charities. And in the future, you're probably going to see some charity things of myself. We were in the midst of trying to do something at the beginning of this year. I don't want to give it away because we'll definitely make a big announcement when we do it. But obviously this deal happened at the beginning of the year, and that unfortunately had to be put in the back burner because we didn't have time. My publicist and my business manager and myself, all hands were on deck for this deal. So, but that program that we are working on behind the scenes, I'm looking really forward to bringing that into play later this year or beginning of next year. I'm fortunate that I know the Wahlberg family here, who is based out of originally from New England. Mark Wahlberg does a charity event usually once a year. I've been part of that for his charity. So I definitely want to give back a lot more with regards to charities, and I look forward to doing that in the upcoming years.
Give us a quick update on how your books are doing, how the radio show is doing.
Well, the radio show is doing great. We're really, really happy. We're almost about to hit our third year. I can't believe I'm saying that, to be honest. Our show is on for nationwide. In Boston, you can hear it on several stations. You can see those on my website if interested, BernardLeePoker.com. 1120 is based AM in Boston. But across the country, you can hear it on Rounders Radio, or you can get it via podcast as well. This week we had Eric Baldwin, who was 2009 Player of the Year for Card Player, and we're going to have Mark Safe, Barry Greenstein, Jason Mercier, who was the Bluff Player of the Year, coming up. We're looking to get Harrison Gimbel, who won the PCA. So we really try to stay somewhat current with the people that we're talking to. And then just fortunately, you know, for better or worse, playing on tour, going on tour, working with ESPN, you know, I think I'm one of the few shows, in all honesty, that has had every single one of the November Niners on my show. And I can honestly say that, you know, even though Phil didn't come exactly on my show, we did have an interview that he did conduct, and we were able to put it on the show as well. So, you know, we're fortunate that we're able to get some pretty good guests. And, you know, Darvin came on the day after. We did a post-game WSOP wrap-up from my show. It was a three-hour show, and Darvin came on, and we had Joe Cata come on the other day. And so we're fortunate that we have that, and we have some pretty interesting conversations. So we're very pleased that we're about to celebrate our third anniversary on that. The books are doing great. It's funny that you say it. We're just about to order, I think it's our fourth or fifth run of one of the books. It's called The Final Table, and it's based off of my columns in the Boston Herald, which, again, I can't believe I'm saying this. 5 years I've been writing for the Boston Herald, and so many people kind of jump in the middle of it. They, you know, maybe the third year or fourth year, they start reading it every Sunday in the Boston Herald and say, how long have you been writing this? And I say, well, since 2005. And they go, do you have the past columns? And after you hear that over and over and over again, I might not be a bright guy, but beat me over the head enough times, I'm going to figure it out that people might want to read the old columns. And so I decided to put them all together into a book. And then in addition to that, not just give them the columns, but on the other side of the opposite side of the page, I said, you know, maybe I'll just write down why I wrote this column, or maybe some extra interesting facts about this column. And it really, you know, of course, at the beginning it took off like hotcakes because everyone was like, this is exactly what I wanted. So we did a volume one. It was received so well that I think that's that one. We're probably, I'm ordering the fifth set for that. And then volume two came out as well. And if I can find some time, we're looking at potentially making a volume three.
So now I want to talk to you a little bit about what you had mentioned before about traveling for poker and basically not going too far west of Chicago. But now
right.
PokerStars has now announced this North American Poker Tour, which is coming up, I think, next week at the Venetian. Are players excited to have another circuit to keep them going in the United States and North America?
Well, you know, to be honest, I haven't really spoken to anyone in particular about it. Obviously, we've reported it on ESPN's Inside Deal about the tour. And the one thing I will say that I think is very, very good is that if we continue, you know, in this world that we've lived in, the registration of tournaments has gone down over the last couple years. And I don't necessarily think it's the waning interest of poker, but I think it's a couple reasons. One, the recession. Everyone feels it, right? You know, suddenly where you had $500 or $1,000 and you say, you know what, I'm going to go play in a poker event. That's the last thing that's on people's minds. and then two, in addition to that, you know, the world of online poker became very murky of whether you can qualify or whether you can't. Make no bones about it. In 2006, when we had, I think it was 8,700 players qualify, the following year, if this UIGA did not come into effect, we would have blown 10,000 easily. Yeah. I mean, I have no doubt in my mind that that number would have been well over 10,000. So put all that together, and I think that's where the registrations have gone down. Well, the NAPT is something where you can now qualify online. And so because of that, the registrations are going through the roof. They are going to have more players in that event than most circuit events, I mean, probably definitely more than any other circuit event that went on last year, and potentially more than any WPT event as well. Put that all together, you're going to have a lot of interest in this tour. Now, whether that's good for this tour only or not, I think it's good for poker. And that's the most important thing. To me, I think anything that's good for poker is a good thing. You know, for example, when we were talking about last year, Maria and Tiffany Michelle going on was an amazing race.
Yeah.
I mean, is that good for them? Well, I don't really care if it's good for them or not. You know, we can debate that till the cows come home. But it's good for poker that there is somebody like that. There are two people that are in the mainstream TV. Robert John Ballon going to Survivor. You know, whatever you think of him or whatever scenarios that he does on the felt, that's good for poker. And again, I think this NAPT is going to be good for poker because it's going to really bring online registration to the forefront. When you see 5, 6, 7, maybe 1,000 players playing in a main event, and you got a prize pool that's near, you know, 4 or 5 million, and first prize going to be well over, you know, close to a million, if not more, that's going to start opening the eyes of the World Series. That's going to start opening the eyes of the WPT. And if this is a success, the WPT, especially now that they've signed this deal with that was bought out by Party Gaming, which is also affiliated with Party Poker, that's going to start opening their eyes. The World Series is going to have to start opening their eyes, and that's good for poker. And that's why I'm very, very pleased about it, that it's going to really help poker start coming back up. And then once we get this act finalized and we get internet poker regulated, which I firmly believe will eventually happen, then we're going to see a boom like we haven't seen since Moneymaker, and it's going to be another big one.
Excellent. Now, the Foxwoods obviously is a good home for the WPT events. Do you anticipate an NAPT ever coming to Foxwoods?
I think just based off of contractual obligations, I don't think that that's possible. Okay. Just because I think that the WPT obviously would have an exclusive. I would have to defer to the Foxwoods representatives for the exact contract wording, but I couldn't see that not being the case, based off of any business contracts that I've seen.
Well, we know you're a busy guy, and we know you have another interview right around the corner, so we want to thank you for your time, but we're hoping, would you stick around for our Hand of the Week segment?
Sure, no problem.
Hey, this is AJ Benzie.
This is Justin Bonomo.
This is Downtown Chad Brown.
Hi, this is Clint Gowan.
This is Daniel Negreanu.
Hey, this is David Singer.
This is Linda Johnson.
Hi, this is Greg Raymer.
Hi, this is Hoyt Corkins.
Hi, this is Cindy Violet.
Hi, this is John D'Agostino.
This is Joe Seabach.
This is Jennifer Harmon.
Yeah, this is Johnny Chan.
This is Cowboy Kenna James.
Hi, this is Mark Safe. This is Paul Wasika.
Hi, this is Miami Johnson.
This is Dora Brunson, and you're listening to Annie Up.
All right, Bernard, this hand comes from one of our longtime listeners. He goes by Rant on our forums, and he definitely earns that name, Chris, I think.
I think he
this
does.
Is the kind of guy that shoos the kids off the lawn. all right, so this is an online hand. It's a 50-cent, $1, no-limit game on PokerStars, Bernard.
Okay.
It's a 6-max, too. Do you have any specific tips before we get started on the difference between full ring and 6-max?
Well, you're going to have to play more hands. I mean, that's pretty straightforward with regards to that, especially in tournaments, right? Because the antes and the blinds are going to start going up higher and higher. But you have to open up your range a little bit more. You know, one of the ways that you can think about it is, normally when you play a full ring game, small blind, big blind, you have early, middle, late position. The way I try to think about it a lot is that there is no early position anymore. You basically picked up those three people and threw them out, and now you're going straight to middle and late position right away. And if you think about it, you're almost right at like mid position, and then you go straight to hijack cutoff button, right? Because there's only four people after the small blind and big blind.
Right.
Now, if you think about it in that sense, that you're automatically going to a late position with no opens, well, now your range opens up, right? Now suddenly your range opens up big time. And, you know, sometimes I consider the first person, the quote-unquote under-the-gun person, to be kind of like an early position, and then it goes to hijack cutoff button. So that's kind of the way I think about it. And being that is the case, your range is going to open up a lot. Now, I will take one quick step back in saying that if everyone at the table feels that way, and or if everyone at the table is acting that way, well, then three betting is definitely going to be something that's got to be more in the equation than not, because people are going to be opening with wide range of hands.
Great. That's a great tip.
Very good. All right. Well, the chip stacks in this particular hand range from $82, of which the villain has in this hand, all the way up to $184, which our hero Rant has. And we have the first two people in fold, and then Rant picks up 9 of hearts, 10 of hearts. He's third in. What would you do here?
In all honesty, fold. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I mean, I know I've just said you should open up your range, but I just don't see necessarily in a cash game why I would put that. Now, if I was on the button, maybe if I was in the blinds, maybe. But, I mean, I don't think it's necessary to pay it. That's me. I mean, I'm a little bit of a tighter player. But to say that you would come in on that, obviously I wouldn't want to come in on a limp. I'd like to come in on a raise. If you're going to come into the pot, let's raise it to try to pick them up right away or see what it is. So if the situation was that the person was going to come into the pot, which I'm assuming that that's the case, or else you wouldn't ask me the question, then at the very least I hope the person did raise.
Now, you mentioned the cash game. Is there a difference between how you'd play this if it's a tournament then?
See, I mean, you can go back and forth, right? I mean, in a cash game, and I can actually go with the two different logics of, in a cash game, I might play this because I can afford to go back into my pocket, right? In a tournament, I can't afford necessarily to play this because if I flop 10 high, now what do you do? I mean, do you really go for this or not? So, I mean, it's kind of back and forth. I would, again, I don't know this table as well, right? If I've been playing at this table for 4 hours, it's a different story. So, I just, you know, based off of the absolute not sure what this table is about, I wouldn't have started out playing that way, and I would have folded. That's just me. But, again, this person could have been playing for 4 hours and really felt like people are folding a lot, so let's take a shot at with 10-9 suited.
All right, well, our hero does raise $2 to $3, and he says he did so because the big blind is a, quote, huge fish, and he wanted to isolate against him in the blinds. He is trying to steal, but obviously if this big blind calls, then he's fine. So he raises to $3. The villain on the button calls, but the two blinds get out of the way.
Okay. Well, right there, I'm worried, right? Because now you're obviously not in position, not good. Obviously, if it was the big blind and you wanted to go after the big blind only, then you're obviously in position and can wait to see what that person does. Now, one of the things that I would say is that if the big blind, and again, we haven't had enough of a description, but if the big blind is something of a fish, that's fine, but I would, to be honest, I would like to go after the quote-unquote fish with a big hand, because that fish is going to come all the way, and then when you flip over aces, they're going to be like, oh, I couldn't believe it. But to go after them with a marginal hand, that means you're going to have to hit a hand, because this fish is not going to fold. So, again, I'd be very wary of going after a quote-unquote fish with a marginal hand, because they're never going to fold. Now, if this fish is a person who folds after a flop, you know, sees a flop and folds, okay, well, different story. But if, just as advice in general, again, not saying about this specific player, just in general to your listeners, is that if there is a fish out there who is going to protect every single time in the big blind with very, very marginal hands, and you're going after them with a marginal hand as well, well, really, it's a race to see who wins the flop. And I don't want that situation. I don't want to have a situation where, if everyone knows, to hit two unpaired cards is one out of every three. Well, I don't want a 33% chance that I'm going to outflop him. Granted, if you're in position, you have a little bit more of an advantage. But if I'm going to go after a quote-unquote fish, I want to go after it with a big hand. And in tournaments, that's definitely something I try to do. If I have a big hand and it's a fish in there, I'm going to want to drag this person in as far as I can to try to get as many chips as possible. So anyway, just some feedback.
Yeah, very good. Okay, we go to the flop, which is 10 of spades, 5 of spades, 6 of hearts, and
right.
Our hero's read on the button, or the villain here, is that he bought in short, he's playing one table, hasn't played well or terribly, but he does seem inexperienced. So if,
okay.
With that information,
okay.
We hit top pair, weak kicker, and we're first to act.
Well, if that person is weak and inexperienced, then I would say that they're going to one of two things. They're either going to play straightforward ABC poker because they don't know any better, or they're going to, you know, be a fish the whole time and just call off with everything. The question, I guess, that we'd have to ask is that did this person play a lot of hands? Were they playing every single hand or not? It's kind of hard to understand
right.
that. So, unfortunately, we just don't have enough information. But right now, you played 10-9 suited and you flopped top pair, kind of weak kicker with a backdoor flush draw. I guess you could argue backdoor straight draw, that'd be a stretch, but you could. You got to come out betting. I mean, you can't just check this right here. You don't want an ace, king, queen, or jack to flop, and then all of a sudden your top pair is null and void, basically.
All right, the pot's $7.50. What's the right bet amount here?
I would say anywhere from, you know, half, maybe two, maybe 60%, two-thirds to three-quarters of the pot. That's fine.
All right. Well, it sounds like our hero is in line here. He bets $5.
Yeah, that's
and,
fine.
And our villain just calls.
Okay. So that, now that's got to worry you a little bit, and let's throw out some scenarios and some possibilities. Unless this person is playing, and ironically, this is exactly what we do. I teach for the World Series Academy, which we're having a class this weekend in Las Vegas, but this is what we do in cash camps as well. We go through a lot of these scenarios, and we go through them for cash in tournaments. So what I would say argumentatively is if this villain is not a tricky player, right, if this person is an inexperienced player, they're probably not slow-playing aces, right? I just don't see that being the case. So you can really throw out all the aces, kings, queens, jacks in this scenario because that person would have probably re-raised Rant. So when they're calling here, could they have 10 better kicker? I think that's a possibility. Could they have middle pair? Possibility. Could they be on the flush draw? I think that's definitely a possibility as well. So, you know, those are just things that I'm going to put them on range-wise. You know, maybe, you know, could they have hit a set? They could have. I mean, they definitely could have hit a set, and now playing very, very slow. But again, this is what I'm trying to do, and just when I'm playing in a game, to give them kind of a range of hands, what could they be playing? And I will want to take one quick step back is that if you are not in a hand, I would really be very, very careful of watching the hands that two other players are playing because I want to see ultimately what this person played. Like if I was the small blind or big blind and not in the hand, I'd be very curious to see what the villain played eventually if they're able to flip over their hand because I want to see how they played this hand out. If I'm in a situation and playing the same type of hand with that person, I'll kind of know how they play. I hope that makes sense.
Makes perfect sense.
Right. Yep.
All right, so we move on to the turn, which is the
yep.
8 of hearts. So our board
right.
now is 10 of spades, 5 of spades, 6 of hearts, 8 of hearts. So now we pick up
so
a flush draw.
Yeah, I mean, it's a straight flush draw,
straight
right? So this is
yeah.
a straight gut shot flush draw. Now, I mean, to be honest, that's a bingo card, right? That's a really, really nice card for you because now not only do you have top pair, not only do you have the straight gut shot flush draw, and I would say it would be a real stretch for this person to now have the heart flush draw. Why? If they had a heart flush draw, they would basically, the only cards that I see them holding is ace five of hearts. That's the only hand that I could see them. Why would they call with, you know, I don't put them on ace king, ace queen, ace jack, king queen, king jack of hearts, and then after the flop, them calling. There's no reason to call here. Two overs, no, I mean, that's just such a stretch. So the only hand that they potentially could be on a heart draw is ace five of hearts. Maybe they call with that. So if you take that out of the equation, their straight flush gut shot straight draw, if they hit the flush, they've got it. I think they really have this hand right now. And in addition to that, I think that they obviously, if they hit their seven, they've probably got the hand with the straight. And if they hit their nine, you know, maybe you can worry a little bit. Maybe they have a seven, you know, they have pocket sevens or something like that. But I think this is a really nice card for, is it Rant? Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Rant. So I think this is a nice card. And I would, if I was him, I'd come out betting.
All right. And the pot is $1,750. Do you keep the same percentage that you were doing on the flop?
Yeah, I would. I'd keep about the same percentage.
Okay, he bets out $12,
right,
and then gets min-raised to 24 by our villain.
Okay, the real question right here is if you're willing to go broke on this hand. And, you know, if you think about how many outs the person probably has, if you go with every single heart as an out, then they've got nine outs. The two other tens would be 11. If you say the nines, I think the nines might not be outs. You know, potentially that they could have a seven, so those aren't the outs. But if a seven hits, there's three more outs because you can't count the seven of hearts twice. So there's 14 outs. So if you are behind here, which you might not be, by the way, right? They yeah. might. They actually may be on a draw as well. So you have 14 outs, which is basically at worst you're a 30-70 dog in this specific situation. Again, because you're not, now how much money does villain have behind is going to be another huge consideration.
Yeah, he started the hand with $82.
Okay, so he's probably with 24 in here and 5, 30, so 30. He's put in a good portion of his stack, probably 40% of his stack here. So you have to really think, like, is a person going to fold? Do you have that much fold equity? You really don't. You don't have a ton of fold equity here. Again, because we don't know this player, has this player ever folded after putting 30% of his pot in? And again, this is a 1-2 table, so it's only another $40, $50. We don't know how much this person values $40 or $50. This isn't $500 or $5,000 they're going to be putting in. And it's just really a question of, do you want to put this other person to the test right then and there? Why did they min-raise? Again, I apologize. Everything is always, it depends. A min-raise often suggests, a situation where the person wants you to call. I think this person only had a couple choices. They couldn't raise a normal 3x raise, because if they made a 3x raise here, they're putting in over half their stack, and they're telling you they're committed. So it's a real tough. This is a tough question right here, because you have to make the choice: are you going to go for it or not? You know, are you thinking about going for it or not? I'll be perfectly honest. In my situation, if I'm going to play 10-9 of hearts, again, I want everyone to make sure that this is the rationale. If I'm going to play 10-9 of hearts, I'm not going to get many more boards that are better than that for me. Right, I've got a gut shot straight flush draw where I firmly believe that if I hit the flush, I win. I've got a gut shot straight draw as well. I have top pair. This is kind of why you play 10-9 of hearts. Right? Now, I know that they've just min-raised you, but I'm willing to go broke now, and I'll go for it. You know, I mean, we're not putting in $200, $400 to try to go for this. This is another $50, right, for me. And if I'm going to play, if I've decided to play 10-9 of hearts before the flop, and I get this flop down, I mean, I guess that's the question. If this flop just came down, I gave you four cards, are you willing to go broke on that hand? I'm going to say, yeah. And so I would have shoved all in.
All right,
I would have
so
gone right back over the top.
You were re-raised. All right.
Yeah, I would have gone back over the top and said, God bless you if you've got something better, and let's go for it. And at very worst, I've got these 14 outs in my mind.
Exactly.
All right, well, our hero decides just to call.
Which is tough. I mean, I understand that they believe they have 14 hand because you have no information right now. You have no information to go with. The other possibility there is if you put them on a range of hands like a flush draw, you know, why did they min raise? You could, if they call and the river comes a blank, not a spade, because they could have been on a spade draw, you might do a stop and go and shove and see what they do. You're really putting them to the test, and see what they want to do. Obviously, if you missed, it's going to be a real bluff, but we'll see what happens.
All right. The river comes down. It's the five of clubs. So our final board is 10 of spades, 5 of spades, 6 of hearts, 8 of hearts, 5 of clubs. So we missed all those outs.
Yep.
With the villain raising, do we kind of shut down here?
So what happens on the river, does Grant
it's up to
check
us,
or does he bet out?
We're first
to
act.
Oh, when it comes to us? At this stage, I don't mind check calling. You know, if they shove all in on the river, well, now you got a choice, right? What it is. But hold on, let me just take it for a second. You check call. If you check call, unfortunately, they can make a complete stone cold bluff on you. You might want to fire out a small defensive bet, maybe a $10 bet to see what they do. You know, that might scare them. See what happens. But, you know, this is where position is so important in No Limit Hold'em, because you're now at the mercy of letting them decide what to do after you make a decision.
Now, your defensive bet, is that designed to get them to just call that amount so you keep the pot small?
Right, exactly. The defensive bet is often used a lot of times where it confuses the player first. Like, why did they just throw out $10? Do they really want me to call that badly? And then also, it just really kind of makes them think about it and potentially say, I just call, what do you have? And they may have a decent hand, you know, the two pair or whatever it may be, and be like, I'm just very confused. Are you just doing this to try to trap me? And so to put out a small defensive bet there wouldn't be horrible. So that's another possibility.
All right, well, that's exactly what our hero does here. He bets $15, and unfortunately the villain moves it all in over top of him.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, right then and there, you're not happy, obviously. I don't think that person is making that all-in move with that short of a stack to try to get you off the hand. So, you know, you kind of got your answer in the whole equation. I think that person, a five on the river, so, you know, did that person catch two pair and catch a boat on the river? Or at the very least, did that person have, you know, something along the lines of, you know, even 3-4 or 7-9 or something like that, or maybe hit a set. And those things make sense. I just don't think you're winning at that point. So even though you've put in that much money to fold there, I don't think is a bad fold. You know, that's the situation. Again, I would have personally played it. I would have shoved on the turn and been fine with it. If they flipped over a set, I know I still have a ton of outs.
Exactly. Well, a hero does decide to fold, and the villain does not show his card, so we'll forever not know what he had there.
Forever not know. Especially with the nice defensive bet there, I don't think that the villain is going to make that kind of a move on a stone cold bluff, because they don't have any fold equity per se. You know, they've with raising another 25 or say so. I just don't see that being the case. So I think it's a good fold on the river, even with top pair. But in all honesty, I would have liked to have seen them shove on the turn to put maximum pressure. My whole goal when I'm teaching is I like putting maximum pressure on my opponent and putting that pressure on them and letting them make the decision. Again, we did talk about it. There's so many things that we have to consider and think about, because how much money they have, is this amount of money, you know, have they been calling 3-4 times and not caring about the money? Well, then they're going to automatically call. But I would love to have put the maximum pressure on them and been happy with, you know, the decision, because again, this isn't that you're only on a stone cold draw and praying for a gut shot straight draw. You do have top pair, so there is an outside possibility that you have the best hand. From the looks of it, you probably didn't, but you know, just taking the situation and what we saw on the turn, there is still that possibility.
Well, terrific, Bernard. We appreciate it. And Rant, we'll send you a $10 staking package from getastake.com. And the rest of our listeners, email your hands of the week to podcast@annieupmagazine.com.
Bernard, we want to thank you for taking so much time. We know you got another interview coming up, but best of luck with the Foxwoods deal and everything else you're doing.
Well, thank you very, very much. I appreciate you having me on anytime, guys. I'd love to join you here.
Thanks, Bernard.
Wow, Chris, another great hand analysis there.
Well, basically because I wasn't involved.
Yeah. You know, I was trying to keep up with the hand, so I didn't mess it up like I normally do, right? But it was tough because I had the house phone on 9-1 ready to push 1 to find out what the heck's going on with you over there.
Another one of the downfalls of doing the show on Skype only. You don't know if I'm dead in my chair or not. But, you know, he was covering all the bases, and he's so smart, and he knows what he's talking about. And, of course, he's a much better player than I am. Why should I interrupt? You know, usually I only interject when I disagree. I really didn't have anything to disagree with, so I was happy he was there, and I got some work done. Sent a few emails, had some lunch. It was great.
Well, he's a great guest, and we appreciate him having him, and wish him best of luck with Foxwoods and everything else he's doing.
Absolutely. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.
All right, hitting record again.
Chris, in the butt. Put a cell phone in the butt. Put a giant pizza in the butt.
Oh, jeez. I got that recorded, so we'll see what happens with that.
Ovo in your butt.
Copper plate in your butt. All right, here I go.
All right, here we go. Poker stars and Canadian sports broadcaster.
God.
Am I supposed to edit this out of the show now?
Yeah, I guess so.
No, I'm going to keep it in. I have so much power.
What the heck is...